Broadcasting from the Prime Meridian Bank Studios in the capital city of Tallahassee, this is Front Row Knowles with Tom Block and Keith Jones. Front Row Knowles is brought to you by Hobson Chevrolet of Cairo, Georgia. Get your best deal the Hobson way.
Good day, everybody. Tom Block, Keith Jones. This is Front Row Knowles. KJ, how are you, sir?
I'm doing well. I have my fill. I'm good for a couple more days. I've had my fill of college football, but I'm sure the need for speed will come back here shortly.
Just like recruiting used to be dominate the conversation more than the games, now the transfer portal does that. But we're not going to talk about the portal so much as the game that wasn't a game. It was a spring showcase. So even though it was a glorified practice with a crowd, KJ, your need has been satiated here for football for now?
Well, just the ability to go to the stadium, sit in the stands, watch something going on in the field. We'll talk about what we saw on the field, and maybe we may even disagree a little bit on what we thought we saw on the field. But yes, the ability to be there and experience it. I'm satiated for a little while anyway.
Okay. Well, Bob Ferrante, our Osceola insider, will join us, and we'll talk about what we saw there. It was like most spring showcases, games, practices, whatever you want to call them, at least in my estimation. Some to like, some not to like, but that's the reality. I don't think anybody is ever walking away thinking, oh, we're good at all 22 positions, and we're too deep, and the long snapper and kicker and punter are all good, too. So we don't even practice before our first game. We'll just show up and go.
It's the nature of spring, particularly, again, for those of us who have been around long enough to remember when it was 20 days, and now it's 15, and two or three of those 15 are acclimation days. And in fact, FSU technically had a final practice, I believe, on Sunday afternoon. So that was actually number 14 on the Saturday. But it is what it is. Everybody plays by the same rules, and you just got to learn to live with it.
We'll talk about the game and the players and all that. The stadium is still pretty jarring, is it not, KJ?
If you've not seen it, if that was your first time, you'd not looked at any photographs, you've not gone online and looked at the camera, yeah, it's very jarring. And I had kind of been following it along, and obviously I'm on campus just about every day. I'm not over on that side, but, I've kind of seen it. But it is something. If you're from out of town, you came in for the game, and that was your first time looking at it. It is a little unnerving is not the right word, but it'll take your breath away a little bit.
Unnerving is the fact that when you're in the radio booth on the ninth floor, sometimes maybe a paper would blow out, and it really was not that far down to row 85. But at present, as currently deconstructed, you really don't want to lean over to see where that pen dropped to, because it went kind of far down, if you know what I'm saying.
You weren't sticking your head out the window to check what was going on down the way, is what you're saying.
No, it's kind of like getting to a cliff. I'm good being 2 yards away from it. That's the state. I've seen the 24-hour camera that Seminole Boosters has set up, but it's still different to approach the stadium from outside and be able to look in at the 50-yard line and see the field, and then see the construction folks who took the liberty to back their pickup trucks up there and tailgate to watch the game, because when are they going to have that opportunity again?
Exactly. Yeah, it was a little different, no question.
Yeah, and it'll be a lot different this year. All right, we'll talk what happened on the field instead of what's going on around the field when Bob Ferrante joins us, and he will do that right after we do this on Front Row Knowles.
Front Row Knowles is presented by Hobson Chevrolet of Cairo, Georgia. Get your best deal the Hobson way. Now back to Tom and Keith.
We are back on Front Row Knowles. Time to open up the Earl Bacon Agency hotline, the Earl Bacon Agency, ensuring your future together. And we say hello to our Osceola insider, Bob Ferrante. How are you, Bob?
I'm great. How are you guys?
We are good. Before we dive into what took place on the field at Doe Campbell, Keith and I were just discussing how odd the stadium seemed and felt in light of ongoing progress, if you will.
Yeah, I first got a glimpse of it maybe 2 weeks ago. There was a gathering of FSU boosters at the Champions Club, And I ran to a couple of people. I said, can I step out and actually, you know, take a look? And it was my first real look from up above to see what the West Side looked like and to see the progress all around the state of Montana on the East Side too, obviously. It's jarring. And all of our photos from the spring showcase were from the East sidelines over to the West. So you're seeing out into the light. It's in a very absurd 2024 view of Doak Campbell Stadium that we all had on Saturday. It's just, this is part of phase one. This is part of Michael Alford called it hard hats and dust. And there's a lot of dust. There's a lot of hard hats. Yeah, a lot of work to do.
And it'll be starkly different when you show up for the first home game, because the majority of that area will have something in it, albeit the vast part of it will be temporary stands to be removed later, but at least it won't be that big hole.
Yeah, I'll be very curious to I guess, see in August what that looks like. You know, maybe they'll let us in to just see, okay, what is the seating vantage point? I think I understand these are temporary yet chairback seats that are coming in there. So I may be wrong on that, but that sounds like a decent compromise kind of experience for the fans for, what is it, 6 home dates. And we'll just have to see what that looks like. I know everybody wants to be in the shade. I know a lot of fans are still going through with the boosters and that seat selection process. Obviously, the boosters are deep into the Ireland sales too, but there's a lot going on for fans to consider as they weigh where they want to sit next football season.
I think we're just going to have to describe it as it is what it is for this year, right? And then we'll await what it'll look like, which will be vastly improved and vastly different when we kick off the 25 season. All right, we're not going to talk about the 25 season, at least not in this segment. Next segment, we can talk about when FSU is officially going to be out of the ACC, Bob, and you'll be our legal expert for that. But for this one, what jumped out about the spring showcase? The spring practice number 14 feels like the better label for it, but what jumped out for you?
I think the biggest theme is it confirmed a lot of what we saw throughout the course of the spring. You know, we did see improvement through a lot of the transfer players. We did see improvement through a lot of those freshmen, those early enrollees. I think we saw a guy like Jackson West, somebody who maybe you might have written off at some point during his career, whether it was injury or lack of production. You might see after what he did on Saturday as well as the spring, you have a better feeling about Jackson West. You might still think they need to hit the transfer portal at tight end. But again, you're seeing some names develop. I thought everybody wants to talk about the quarterbacks. And my only comment I would say just as a foundation is I didn't see a passing game around DJ Uiagalelei that looked good. Too much edge pressure, too many drops. Yes, DJ was inaccurate at times. And I think everybody maybe touching on the overall numbers. There wasn't a true wow, you know, play a 50-yard touchdown type of thing. But there were moments where he delivered some really good football passes. It looked pretty. Those passes then set up some run plays. You know, we saw some good runs from Aroydell Williams and like Keziah Holmes. So just from an offensive standpoint, there's enough to like. I think the identity of this team might still have to be run the ball to be also successful as a passing team, because that it's going to take some time to get this passing game really settled in. But I think there's a chance that this offense could be quite good and could grow as DJU grows within the offense.
I'm hoping that when we get into the season, we get into game 5 and game 7, we look back at the showcase and we're able to confirm, yeah, the offense struggled. But the biggest reason the offense struggled is the defense is that good.
This is always our April-August discussion, right?
Right, exactly.
The defense tends to be ahead in a lot of regards, and the defense has a ton of talent. Are Florida State's defensive ends and defensive tackles arguably the best in the conference? There's a good argument to be made there, right? You know, we could question the linebackers on a depth of defensive back. This is what Florida State players from your era, KJ, and throughout the 80s, 90s, and on, when the practices are this good, when it makes you prepared for Saturday, when it gets you ready, and the guy across from you isn't as good as you see in practice on all those days, it gives you an element of confidence. So I question in a lot of regards where the passing game is, but also maybe didn't expect as much because you've got so many pieces. You've got a new quarterback. You've got some new receivers. Yeah, there were some injuries at various positions too. So there's a lot of things that just didn't pull together. But I think if this team can run the ball, if this team can play really good defense, you've got a returning kicker and punter. You've got a lot of things going for you. A returning offensive coordinator, a returning defensive coordinator. Mike Norvell, of course, is back calling the shots. There's a lot of continuity there that I think just played into Florida State's favor.
I want to continue this discussion about the passing game. But first, do we have an update on Malik and his injury status and whether it's as severe as maybe it looked or whether it's not as bad?
Nothing official. I think Mike Norvell's, you know, referenced that it he wanted to see what some of the exams were in the week ahead. Potentially, again, I'm speculating here, is there some swelling? You want to let that swelling subside as you do some more exams. So I caution, or there are some people who are thinking Malik Benson's out for a while. We've seen that on social media, on message boards. I would caution that that may not be the case.
Either way, and hopefully he's not out for a while and he's back. To me, you commented before we started recording, or maybe it was when we were recording, you'd go get another tight end in the portal. To me, if you could find a number one receiver, you would go get it. That's a no-dust statement, right? If Keon Coleman, too, is waiting out there, you'd get him either with or without Malik's help. But separate all that, because we're not getting into the portal with the nature of what our show is, I'm thinking about what this offense was in, say, 2021, before Jordan had developed as a passer very much. And before the offensive line had the complement of parts it has now, which is not to say they're perfect now, but it's a better offensive line now than it was in 21. And they ran the ball successfully, and Jordan had a lot of success throwing the football that year. Now, he matured that year as the season went on. So the point I'm making is you're starting this year with a better complement, a better set of running backs, a better offensive line, probably a better collective group of receivers, even though we want them to be better, and a guy that's going to be a fifth-year quarterback. It feels like there's a way to make that work for Mike Norvell.
It feels like there's a lot of pieces there. Trey Benson was a 900-yard rusher for two straight years. We are not discrediting what Trey Benson has left behind. What Roydell Williams brings in, what Lawrence Toofili staying means, what Jalen Lucas means. There's a lot of good pieces there. I think Mike Norvell loves the committee approach. There's the potential of using three and four running backs consistently. I think we like the varied skill set of those pieces, what they can bring to the table.
And I go back to your earlier point, a kicking game and a good defense and playing field position football will give you a couple of three extra games for that offense to get better. So you end up with fall camp and two or three or four games that you can stay in when your offense has not found itself yet and let them hit stride about week five, week six, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. It's a reasonable recipe for success.
And I think there's, what do we call it, a coaching axiom or whatnot, that you have to be really good and win two of the three phases of the game. If you're going to be really good on special teams, you can be really good on defense in a lot of regards. If you can run the ball, that makes your offense good. I don't know. I don't see how some of these games will play out yet. I haven't looked at the matchups. What does Georgia Tech look like? What does Boston College look like? But I'm kind of with you guys. This feels like a team that could get better over the course of the season. I kind of like that Florida State has the extra time in July and August because of this week zero game. This kind of feels like it would help out Mike Norvell and the coaching staff as they blend this roster back together in July and August.
Yeah, we talked about that last week. I feel like the third bye week is an unsung hero for physical health, for mental health, for game planning, for all of those things. That third bye week, I mean, everybody has two, but FSU has a third. That feels significant. Maybe it'll be offset by I'm not going to say a lack of noise, but less noise in Doak Campbell than what we've had previously, given the hole in the side of the stadium. I don't know what that'll be. We'll see. What else? I don't want to focus too much just on DJ and the completion percentage and all that. You know, if Florida State doesn't get another receiver, Bob, and we're going to assume Malik's back and healthy and playing this season, what does that rotation look like for you? Is it he and Kentron and Ja'Kai? I mean, and we're hoping that Hakeem comes around. Is that kind of what we're looking at?
I think you've got options. And I know a lot of folks weren't maybe happy with what they saw at a spring showcase, right? You did see Malik Benson. I think Ja'Kai Douglas has just been super consistent when healthy, not just this spring, but in prior years, right? He is potentially that deep threat, somebody who can take a little bit of the top off the defense. We've talked about the speed element. What can that do broadly for this offense? As far as you get your boom play, but you push the safeties back and you get some easier, maybe lighter boxes, maybe an easier path in the run game. I'm kind of with you guys. We've seen, I would say historically, Mike Norvell and Forsyth haven't brought in quantity of guys through the spring transfer portal window. Who they have brought in, been Keon Coleman, Dylan Gibbons was a two-year productive starter. I think they're going to truly look at those best available guys that really fit, again, culture, production, leadership. Hey, if a Keon Coleman type guy falls in the lap, 100%, they're going to pursue it. And the Keon relationship was there back to high school. I think we've talked about this in past months too. This coaching staff might have missed out on recruitments in that first bite at the apple through high school recruiting, but it brought in a lot of the guys through the portal when they said, hey, it's not working out for me at Alabama, LSU, wherever they are currently. They jump in the portal and they remember Mike Norvell, Alex Atkins, Adam Fuller, that coaching staff. So if you are optimistic about potentially some of those options that might be in the portal, it could be guys that Florida State recruited in 2021, 2020, et cetera.
We're talking with Bob Ferrante. We'll get to the defense in our next segment. Bob, this is the nature of what we do. We talked about, the passing game, it didn't look as crisp as we want. Why don't we flip this the other way? And to me, I really like this stable of running backs that they have, and we didn't even really see all of them, but I think there's a lot there. I think they're going to be really good on the ground this year.
And right, we didn't see Cam Davis, in pads in the showcase, but we did see him at points throughout the spring, and he looks, we've hit on this. Doesn't look like an 18-year-old football player. He looks great from a strength and conditioning standpoint. At what point does a defense say, third quarter, fourth quarter, my goodness, how are we supposed to stop Cam Davis, Roydell Williams, the way they run, the way they cut, Jalen Lucas, the way he runs, the way he cuts, at a running back and receiver. And then, Lawrence Toafili too. DJU was asked, you remember LT from what he did up at Clemson a couple of years ago. So LT is a proven guy that I think to some degree the fan base appreciates, but maybe doesn't see the traditional running back. Again, there are things that LT does really, really well as far as catching the ball out of the backfield, what you can do with him in the screen game and such.
And don't forget, we have yet to see DJU actually running the football.
It's going to be very interesting to see. Okay, it's not a super fast mobile quarterback, right? But it's a big body that is willing to pick up yards. Again, what does third and two look like? What does fourth and one or fourth and two look like?
Mike That's Norvell what I want to see.
Loves to go for it on fourth down. What does it look like? And it may be DJU running, and it may be the threat of DJU running, and somebody else gets the ball in some kind of RPO pitch, who knows what kind of formation they can try.
Yeah, they're going to have options there for sure. All right, that's the offensive side of the ledger. We'll get to the defense next as we continue our conversation with Bob Ferrante from the Osceola right after this on Front Row Noles.
Be sure to subscribe to the Front Row Knowles podcast and follow at Front Row Knowles on Twitter. Now back to at underscore Tom Block and Twitterless Keith Jones. Yes, you heard us right, in the Prime Meridian Bank Studios.
Back on Front Row Knowles, the Earl Bacon Agency hotline remains open. And offense sells the popcorn, defense wins the championship, Bob. Let's start with I guess we can't call him Shade Tree Jr., right? There's not a Shade Tree on the practice field anymore. But what do you think about MJJ? It feels like there's starting to be a buzz that, you know, at Georgia, maybe he moved on from Georgia because it just wasn't working out. And what is Florida State really getting? And that, I don't know, about halfway through the spring, the buzz kind of switched to, oh, he's maybe better than they thought they were getting. I mean, is that this? Am I? I'm not trying to do the hype machine thing, but is that the sense you're getting too? Or further? I don't know. Better than they thought he was. Further along, maybe, than they thought he was going to be.
I think, and maybe KJ can elaborate on this, but philosophically, I think spring practices have changed. From it used to be all about your freshman, your redshirt freshman, your sophomore, your backup, and maybe the juniors and seniors could, to some extent, be on cruise control, be mentors, be leaders. Now, how many seniors do you have out there that have to learn an offense or learn a defense? Or in addition to that, be leaders, be mentors, show how much they can understand schemes. And it was that way for DJU. His first couple practices weren't all that impressive. I mean, even though the arm strength was impressive. Marvin Jones Jr., you did see the speed. You saw the speed pretty consistently. His comfort level, I think he admitted it. His confidence is something that grew throughout the spring. And when he plays with confidence, he feels like a different football player. I feel like there's a guy like Marvin Jones Jr., Omiwa Durojay, again, about 19, maybe just 20 years old, guys who have some experience, but it just takes you time, understand a scheme, get comfortable, be like you know what the guy next to you is responsible for doing. And sometimes it just takes some number of practices. It might take some amount of the summer and then July and August too. But I feel like there's a level of confidence that by the time this team gets to Ireland, it's going to look pretty good.
Everything on the defensive side, guys, and our listeners know this, we have talked about it. Everything has to do with being full speed, not hesitating. And you transfer into Florida State. I don't care where you're coming from or what year you're in school. You're going to different classes. You're sleeping in a different bed. You're eating at a different table. You go left at Georgia, you're going right at Florida State. And unless and until you get comfortable on and off the field, then that confidence level doesn't raise its head. And that's all part of the process. It's as much mental as it is physical for these guys in the portal, in my opinion.
And that's why I think the spring is so important. It's, again, to me, it's totally different than maybe 5 years ago, 10 years ago, with the way spring football is essential. And it might be worth praising a guy like Keon Coleman or Dylan Gibbons before him. They were able to come in after spring practice and catch up so fast. You have to be incredibly smart and football smart and willing to put in that time. I think there's a lot of things we don't maybe see as part of that learning process. We think a transfer's plug and play. There's so much learning. There's so much sitting down. It's probably not a paper binder anymore. It's probably an iPad that they're learning on, right? But there is time involved with coaches and analysts and teammates to truly make this a crash course to be prepared for the next phase of what's up on the football calendar.
Keep mentioning Keon, basketball, football guy, and Tommy Polly was at the game this weekend as one of the coaches, a basketball, football guy. Maybe there's somebody on a basketball roster that's looking to hit the portal that was an all-state football player that they can bring in. I mean, turn over every rock, right? By the way, as a side note, then we'll get back to the team at hand. Not that Mike Norvell's the first coach to do this. Every coach wants, maybe not every coach. Most that want to keep their jobs are going to want to keep a good relationship with former players, and I would just say hat tip to Norvell with what he's done with having the former players come back and guest coach. I talked to Travis Miner for a little bit on the sideline, and not that, to my knowledge, there's ever been ill will with Travis in Florida State. I just don't recall seeing him back a lot over the years, and he's living in South Florida now. Man, he was a heck of a running back too. I think it's a good thing that Norvell is Foster there. I don't know, Keith, you can speak to this as a former player and what kind of outreach you see from the coaches. Not to be negative about other coaches that maybe didn't do it as much, but it seems like a smart play to keep the guys that left their blood, sweat, and tears on the field in your good graces.
Tommy, Mike instituted and still continues a Friday afternoon walkthrough where he brings in 20 or 30 or 40 or 50 former players to spend time actually on the field for a short period of time with the team on Friday afternoon, which I've done a couple of three times my own self. Yes, he is very in tune to making sure that the legacy players, you know, that their dads and soon to be granddads are recognized, as well as the former players that maybe didn't feel as welcome under prior administrations. I'll just put it that way.
Let me jump in. You mentioned legacy players. I'm going to give a shout out to Jaden Floyd real quick. And folks listening to this show may know who Jaden Floyd is, but he's the son of William Floyd, who obviously I work with on the radio network. And Jaden's graduating this year. And he entered the transfer portal, and he's got 2 years left to go play somewhere else. And he was not going to get playing time here at FSU. But he's a super kid. I mean, really, really good dude. And I wish him the best. And for fans wondering why I'm talking about this, I've been asked this question and I've seen it on Twitter. He's the one, when the game is going on, that's standing up on the bench, waving the towel with more passion and enthusiasm for Florida State than anybody else there, because he grew up with his dad being a part of Florida State and loving it. So anyway, good luck to Jaden. I know we got sidetracked there on former players. Bob, you're nodding your head. Is there something you wanted to add there on that?
You know, I think we see Jaden at a lot of baseball and softball games too. He is somebody who wants to embrace the various teams. And I don't know if he was sitting with the animals at the baseball games, but almost every time I'm there, I see him there. And I know he's at softball a lot. So I would say there's a lot of discussion about the portal. Hey, you know, basically you can be a free agent every year now with the way the NCAA's got it set up in the new rules. For a guy like Jaden Floyd to be a walk-on, to have a chance to graduate, then pop in the portal. And yeah, maybe he finds a scholarship and some playing time somewhere to wrap up his career. I do think there are some really neat stories like that that can pop up for a lot of guys who are walk-ons.
Bringing it back to the guys on the field, I mentioned, obviously, no duh, if you could get a number one receiver, you'd get it. I think the other, if I was going to bring in one person on offense, it'd be a number one receiver. And if I was going to get one person on defense, it probably would be one more D tackle. But I like the parts and pieces. Linebacker, there's some guys that have to prove themselves, but I think they might be a little bit better than what we're thinking there in terms of some of those parts. And the secondary, I don't remember the last time they had this many bodies in the secondary that were, I guess, 2013-ish, maybe in that era, you know, when all the starters were going on to the NFL for several years. But they have a lot of bodies in that secondary that can play football. I mean, Keith, you see it. Bob, you're nodding your head. It's not like there's two guys. There's like eight of them out there that are probably going to be playing on Sundays.
I'll be really curious to see what Mike Norvell does as far as just managing all these guys who all want playing time, right? And the good thing with DB is you're going to play nickel a ton. And I don't have the percentages of how often they were in nickel, but it feels like that's your base defense these days. And to your question about, do you go after a linebacker or a D tackle in the portal? I'm not sure there's a wrong answer, and it's a delicate roster management situation, but they're complementary. If you found another D tackle, it yet again makes your linebackers look better because of the job the guys up front do.
That's my rationale for it. It makes everybody else on the field look better if you get better up front.
Yes. I think they've kicked the tires and looked at a lot of linebackers through the years. And my only caution is those high-end linebackers tend to, let's say they know where they want to go when they jump in the portal, or they're just, maybe there's an easier path to playing time somewhere. But Florida State's found some good pieces at linebacker through the portal. Tatum Bethune was a good one, but he wasn't a spring transfer at linebacker. And I think they've probably lucked out with Justin Cryer coming from Northwestern for a different set of circumstances with that coaching change up there. So I think they've done a good job of collecting pieces. I think Randy Shannon does get critiqued for how he recruits at linebacker. but he has developed exceedingly well. I mean, Kalen DeLoach, just look at how far he came in his career. Tatum Bethune, what he produced over the last 2 years. I think we've seen improvement from a Blake Nicholson. Fryer could be somebody who gives you good playing time. And DJ Lundy, yet again, the wrestler analogy to some extent, he's had to shed weight, I think, consistently throughout his career to get himself on the field, to get himself to where he can be out there. So maybe this isn't the best linebacker core we've seen in a long time, but I think it's one that can be very, very, very functional given the talent around it.
Guys, I'm going to go out on a limb, but I'm going to tell you this linebacker core is going to be a strength of this defense. I bet you if you go back and look at the technical aspect, because I've concentrated on them a little bit, that group probably graded out better than either the defensive ends, the defensive line, or the defensive backs. Now, they didn't necessarily make the plays, but you go back and look at the passing game over the middle, and they were, even in zone coverage, they were hooked up with people. And yes, there were some runs, okay, and they got screened off a little bit, but those runs were the defensive ends and the defensive backs' fault, not the linebackers' fault. I think this group has a chance to be very unheralded and be very, very good. I hope so anyway.
I thought it was interesting, Bob. And by the way, we haven't even mentioned this. Kudos to Jerry Kutz and the Osceola folks for the event that took place last week at the Moon on Friday night. It was a great event, and Mike Norvell was, you know, he was good as always. I thought he was maybe a little more candid than you see him sometimes, and it was positive. But one of the guys he was sort of truth serum about, he couldn't say enough about Nicholson and how he's one of the best athletes on the team. He's 10 pounds heavier, really excited about him. It was more praise than you typically get in the media setting there. So, I mean, he obviously knows more than we do, Bob.
Yeah, I've always likened Blake Nicholson to a running back that plays linebacker. I mean, he did both in high school, right? I think Adam Fuller was very high on him. You know, again, when I threw out a softball question of, who is developing, who is looking like that next guy at linebacker, without mentioning any names to Adam Fuller, he quickly threw out Blake Nicholson. And for him, the discussion was only about Blake Nicholson, just in his development, how he can cover the wheel route, just knowing, instinctually kind of seeing something develop. I think we also have to remember Blake was not an early enrollee last year, so he didn't have the benefit of those spring practices. So his development looked a little bit different last fall than, say, another linebacker, right? So I think there are, yes, would you love to have a linebacker that you can plug in out of the portal, potentially? Sure. But the other argument is, could you give the younger guys some playing time? A Cryer, a Nicholson, Sean Murphy. I mean, any of these guys, whoever they feel confident in, and it's a four-man rotation if you're going 4-2-5. But to KJ's point, he's seeing that development, maybe even more than honestly I was. But there's encouraging development out of some younger guys that maybe the fan base just didn't see it last year, but now it's just starting to emerge.
Bob, we'll let you go on that note. We didn't even pin you down on the NFL draft. I mean, do you want to offer a prediction on you don't have to pick a team. Jared Verse going north of 15 or south of 15 overall in the first round?
I would go north of 15. I think a team is going to fall in love with the skill set, the personality, the work ethic. I think a lot of people are going to be very curious about that pick.
And who's the second Noel off the board? Is it Coleman or is it Fisk?
Yeah, that's a weird one, right? Because after the combine, I think even Daniel Jeremiah was saying he could see and he has heard some chatter about Fisk being a potential late first round guy. And now all of a sudden we're seeing a lot of the mock drafts are Keanu the head of Braden Fisk. There's probably going to be a right answer. It's going to be whichever NFL team solves it for all of us. But I think we could really see both of those guys off the board, let's say pretty early in round two.
When everything's said and done, five or less over all the rounds or six or more?
Oh, that over under is too low, Keith. You got to move that. You got to move that up to make it fair.
I was trying to give him a softball.
I mean, you got to get that at least in the eight range and like set that at. Let's go 8.5 is where that number is, Bob. 8.5. Are you over or under?
I tell you, I'm going to go over because I do think it's a deep group on a successful football team. We know historically, scouts like to watch winning teams and they see those guys develop. We saw a lot of guys invited to the combine. That's an indication that NFL teams like them. I'll also add, I think if Jordan Travis gets drafted, it helps push you into that over category. I think him throwing now, you know, we saw on Twitter, Devin Travis throwing out some video of Jordan throwing, and he's had some workouts. I think a team is going to take a shot at Jordan Travis because of the tape and knowing that he's on that road back.
Bob Ferrante, our Osceola Insider. Thank you, sir.
Take care, guys.
See ya. Finish up Front Row Knowles right after this.
Be sure to subscribe to the Front Row Knowles podcast and follow at Front Row Knowles on Twitter. Now back to at underscore Tom Block and Twitterless Keith Jones. Yes, you heard us right, in the Prime Meridian Bank Studios.
Okay, time to finish up the NFL draft, Keith. I'm not going to lie, I think it's a product of having kids and real responsibility. There was a time when I used to watch pretty much the entire draft, not just the first round. I mean, let's go drink some beers, boys, and I'll sit here and watch the fifth round of the draft. Now, that day has long since disappeared. Did you ever have one of those days? Or back in your day, they weren't televising all seven rounds of the draft when you had that kind of freedom?
Well, we got our by messenger pigeon or rocks that were pounded out with a hammer and a gravel.
I appreciate you always taking that and run with it when I throw you under the bus like that.
Well, and I was trying to serve up that softball to Bob about the number of kids that get drafted. I just always have taken the conservative approach. I mean, if 8 or 9 or 10 Florida State kids get drafted, there'll be nobody happier than I am. I just hate when people get their hopes up. I mean, I don't believe Jordan Travis will be drafted. I think he would be better served with his agent talking to some clubs and finding an offense, a team, a coaching staff that wanted him, as opposed to somebody with a throwaway pick in the sixth or seventh round, just taking him on a flyer, even though he didn't necessarily, you know, fit their offense. But that's old school thought. I may be completely and absolutely wrong, and I'll be the first to admit that that's a possibility.
Well, let's count them out. Verse is going to get drafted. Fisk is going to get drafted. Coleman is going to get drafted. Johnny's going to get drafted.
Is he?
I think so. Do you think there's doubt there?
I'm just saying he didn't test well, and they put all that frickin', excuse my French.
No, he didn't test bad. He ran pretty well for his size.
But they all those metrics and all that stuff that just drive me nuts. But I hear you. Go ahead.
So that's four. I feel like Jarian Jones and Renardo Green are both going to get drafted. They tested well and opened some eyes. That gets you to six. To me, the guys that are more question marks are the linebackers, Tatum Bethune and Kalen DeLoach. Jordan Travis, I don't disagree. I think, to me, he's worth a draft pick. I think he's a guy that could play in the league for a long time. Smart guy, good team guy, and better ability maybe than we want to give him credit for. Fabian Lovett has moved up a little bit, you know, so maybe he goes. There's some names we're forgetting here. Akeem Dent, Jaheim Bell. Jaheim Bell, because of size, you know, he can catch the football, but he doesn't have the classic tight end size, and there's only one tight end that starts per team, right? I realize they keep a couple more on the roster, so there's not as many tight ends in the league. Trey Benson, we left Trey Benson out. Trey Benson's getting drafted with that speed that he had.
Yeah, I mean, there'll be a number, and like I say, if there's 8, 10, or more of them, I'll be happy as happy can be. But in terms of long-term success, don't discount signing as a wanted, unrestricted free agent, but within a system that you fit, as opposed to being drafted and having to make yourself change.
Yeah, no question about that. I thought it was telling. It's been a while since it felt like this, but on the sideline at the spring showcase the other day, all these pro guys were there hanging out, right? So in one group, you have these former pro guys, which is Tommy Polley and Corey Simon and Peter Warwick and Travis Miner, who were guest coaching. And then slightly down from them, you have, here's Jared Verse and Fisk and Jordan Travis and Jarian Jones is hanging out and all of those guys. And just feels like it's been a while since you had the guys that helped pave the road, you know, and the guys that most recently touched it up, you know, watching the next crop because it's not going to drop off. I mean, Florida State's back to having good talent across the board. Yeah, there's some, you know, there's a couple holes. You always want to look, especially now in this era, you always want to look around and see, can you upgrade? But it was cool to see those guys back at the game the other day. The showcase,
it was.
Excuse me.
Yep. It was. And we don't have time to get into it. We'll talk about the draft next week and maybe later on. But, you know, Florida State's got to manage their roster because they're over the scholarship limit, particularly when it relates to that penalty. And then with the Tennessee law case, we hadn't even talked about the outcome of the hearing on Monday here in Tallahassee. I mean, it's just a very continuing busy time.
It is.
There's a lot more moving pieces that are going to keep on moving.
All right. Yeah, minor setback Monday, it would appear, and then the state of Florida came out on Tuesday, and or they didn't come out, but word got out the state of Florida is threatening to get involved in this legal action too. So we'll see where that goes. Grab the popcorn and settle in. It may still be a while. All right, we're out of time. He's Keith. I'm Tom. Thanks for tuning in to Front Row Noles.